to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Vacation Countdown Guy.
Mr. Vacation Countdown Guy.
We all enjoy going on vacation, but you enjoy reminding everyone at the office every 10 minutes that your vacation is just weeks, then days, then hours, then minutes away.
Yes, we're counting down to.
Why do you, Mr. Vacation Countdown Guy, think the entire accounting department gives a flying rip about the precise time remaining before you leave for Cancun?
All-inclusive obnoxiousness.
We just pray you get sick.
Montezuma's revenge, yeah.
So the next time you're at a meeting and a guy says, I won't miss these meetings when I'm on vacation, give him a knowing nod, acknowledging that you can't wait for him to be gone either, because he's Mr. Vacation Countdown Guy, a real American hero.
Mr. Vacation Countdown Guy.
What does that loser do around here anyway?
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning, Kara. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Wednesday, July 7th, 2010.
Yo, 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 how you doing, Sam? How you doing? Shoot. Shoot, I just want to send a shout out to all my party people out there. You know, we at Wednesday, right? It's Wednesday. I think we need to get our drink on. We need to get back to Texas.
That's what
we
you need.
We need to get our drink on. We need to get our fried jalapenos on. We need to get our fried boudin balls on because we need to get some. Mama needs
jalapenos.
Jalapenos. Shit, I went back to Texas. Everywhere I went, we ordered some fried jalapenos, and that shit was the burn. Okay, boop, boop.
Okay, are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Good morning to you.
Oh, man. I had to get that out. My coffee's kicking in. I'm a happy girl.
Yeah, that's good because I'm still dealing with jet lag here.
Really?
And, yeah, I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and
awesome.
Decided to work a little bit, and that's it, you know. But then I tried to go back to sleep, didn't work, got hungry, so stopped at McDonald's on the way here.
I love that. I love hearing people indulge. Okay, so you went to McDonald's. Tell everybody what you got.
That's indulging going to McDonald's.
Well, it's like a guilty pleasure, wouldn't you agree? I mean, you can't eat it every day, but man.
Yeah, I guess when you're hungry, it tastes good, you know?
Yeah.
But you got to see the crowd there in the morning.
Is it intense?
It's mostly the Mexican gardeners on their way to work.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, I like their the roach coaches. You know, those little trucks that go by selling burritos and stuff. Those are actually pretty good.
Oh, you like those?
You could
get me to buy one if my life depended on it.
Well, actually, it's become kind of the trend, which is like a food court on wheels.
Uh-huh.
And one of my side jobs was I was on a dessert truck at one point.
Are you serious?
Yeah, you know, whatever.
Oh, wow, man.
I've been through it all. It's colorful. Yeah. I have no regrets. Yeah, I would serve people coffee, tea, and like little desserts, mm-hmm. gourmet desserts, and it was called Little Spoon Desserts.
Yeah, didn't you look out of place there?
No, I mean it wasn't all Hispanic people. It was like white people. And
really?
I mean, there's a lot of truck. That's what I'm saying. It's not just like rundown trucks that have dirty eggs and sausage in the back. It's like, you know, there's a lot of different. Have you heard of the Kogi trucks?
No.
Oh my gosh, you haven't heard of Kogi?
No, I haven't.
Kogi is a Korean Mexican fusion. Fusion food, and they do a lot of burritos, like short rib, baby back rib, Korean style burritos. They're really amazing. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of good stuff, but you have to find them on Twitter because you can't. They go to certain spots and they Twitter where they're going to be, and people show up. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, and so they're fun. They're fun little. They're good food though. It's good.
You eat a lot of junk, don't you?
No, I have been. I have been. When I'm on my own, like when I'm back in LA and I'm not doing a lot of fun stuff,
yeah,
I eat like salads and boring stuff. Yeah. It's actually when I get with people that I'm like,
you celebrate. And
yeah,
you
know, like
go.
Some people that have that I know, some people I know that have food like food issues. They eat like they're closet eaters. Like they'll go and be alone and pig out. Where I wouldn't do that. It's not fun.
Right.
It's more fun when you get like a party.
So
or
you're
something.
Not like a binger or anything.
No. Yeah. I just love food.
Right.
I love food.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a gift. I think food is such a way to like bless people. And like tonight, I think we're gonna have a potluck.
Are you really?
Yeah. I'm gonna try to make some of the food that I ate in Texas.
Oh wow.
I'm gonna try to make these fried jalapenos with the jalapenos. they're stuffed with cream cheese and shrimp and lots of different spices, and then you fry them.
That sounds good, actually, you know?
They're really damn good. I had two different kinds, and I got to find out if it's a cream cheese or like a mascarpone cheese or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'll let you guys know.
Sounds fattening, though.
Oh, it is.
Fried?
But I mean,
it's like deep fried?
I'm not going to fry it because I don't have a fryer. I'm going to bread it and kind of like, you know, grill it a bit, like kind of char
it. Is it going to taste the same, though?
It's not going to be as like crunchy. It's going to be more breaded and crispy, but not as like...
Yeah.
They're going to be good, though.
Well, you might as well fry it, you know?
I don't, in a pan or something. Well, no, I mean, I'm pan fry, but I'm not going to, like, deep fry the damn thing.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But more like Cajun dishes. Have you ever had etouffee?
No.
Yeah, you have no crawfish etouffee?
Mm-mm.
Oh, shit. You got to get your crawfish etouffee on.
Guess
damn.
I do, huh?
So good. They're just, you know, I'm still on it. I'm still wanting to cook. I want to feed people now. I want to feed people all the dishes I ate.
Yeah. Well, maybe you should open up a restaurant or something.
No, I'm not that into it.
No?
I just want to do a potluck. Tonight's potluck. If you guys are in town, let me know. Hit me up on Facebook, okay? Yeah. I'll give you an invite.
She'll invite you to her house.
Come on over, but you got to bring something because I can't feed the whole damn neighborhood on my salary or whatever lack thereof. I can't be feeding the whole damn neighborhood on my dessert truck, gourmet truck. Food
yeah, so a potluck
crew.
Sounds good.
It is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Both your roommates back in town?
Yes, they're back in town. We're ready to get our hang on. I think I'm going to... It's been raining horribly. Like, I went to Texas, and then I went to Houston, and they had hurricane watches.
Right.
I mean, I was like, really?
Mm-hmm.
The week that I'm here, we're going to have flood watch, and it flooded.
Really?
Yeah, it flooded.
It did.
Yeah, it flooded in parts, and I didn't get any running in, and then I come back to L.A., and it's been raining.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's going on? So I'm just going to have to face it. So after the station, I'm going to Fryman Canyon. Do you know where that is?
Yeah, but you know what? It's not raining. I mean,
it's more drizzly.
Yeah, not even
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm going to get my run on. I'm going to go be a hardcore runner today.
Yeah,
and
good.
Then I might even do one tonight because Nike has these great runs around town. You could do little Nike runs.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Might double up on that.
Do they give you free shoes or something?
No, but they sometimes you come back and there's treats.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. Which,
after the run, you gain all the weight back.
Well, I think it's more about, you know, it's like rewarding yourself. Not like fat stuff, but there's apples and things like that.
Yeah.
And water. But one time they had a pasta. They had like, they brought in awesome pasta. But you run hard. It's a hard run.
Really?
It's a short.
How far
is it? It's a 3 mile, but it's a fast.
Mm.
It's like, you're just booking. And so then you're like, I can eat the world.
So you think you can keep up?
On that 3 mile run, I really shocked myself. I was leading, I wasn't in the front, but there's maybe about, I want to say, 75 people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably in the top, top 20.
That's
top 15.
Good.
Yeah,
yeah.
Top 15, top 20.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that pretty cool?
I guess it is.
I mean, there's the real fast people, and then you get into the moderate people, and on the moderate people, I'm in the front.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
I see.
So I'm booking.
Yeah.
I'm booking.
Well, some runner you are.
Yeah, you want to come?
What can I say? No, I don't. I hate running.
I'll bring a pack of cigarettes with you and get you through. Bring a couple packs. I want you to smoke up.
I hate running.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. Feeling good.
Second day back in L.A.?
Yeah, it's actually the fourth day.
Oh, for me it's second day.
Yeah.
Fourth day? How's fourth day feel?
Yeah, fourth day feels good. Hold on, we have a phone call. Let's see. Good morning, and you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Sam and Kara. This is Greg in Cleveland, Ohio.
Good morning, Greg in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi, Barbecue Greg.
You remember Greg,
right? This is Barbecue Greg.
That's Barbecue Greg.
Barbecue Greg.
Brent, hot sauce in my bag.
Yeah. Have you missed us, Greg?
Yeah, of course. What do you think I'm calling in? I'm here to welcome you back.
Oh, aww, thank you, man.
Thank you, Greg.
You're so sweet,
man. A little late, but nevertheless.
Yeah, yeah. I know you missed me, but not in a gay way, right? We have to make...
Ever.
That clear, right?
As I always say, I love you in a non-faggot way.
How's the barbecue world, Greg?
That's good. I'm actually calling in because I heard you talking about the fried jalapenos.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, tell me, what do you think about fried jalapenos?
Well, I mean, those are good, but in case you are looking to kind of broaden the Jap perspective.
Yeah, give it to me.
You can. What's very big in the barbecue world is this thing called atomic buffalo turds, or ABTs.
Uh huh.
That's what they were calling it. Atomic. They were calling them atomic something. But go on.
Yeah, atomic buffalo turds is what we call them. And basically, nice. What you do is you take your jalapeno pepper, and if you have a little coring device, you could leave them whole and just cut the tops off and then core them out.
Okay.
Or a lot of people also just like to cut them in half and then take the seeds and the rinds out that way. And then you stuff them with, like our favorite here is breakfast sausage combined with cream cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And then you stuff the jalapeno pepper with that, and then you wrap a piece of bacon around it, and then you put it on the grill on medium heat until the bacon is done.
Wow.
And that typically runs about 35 to 40 minutes, and cooks a little bit of the heat out of the jalapeno, but it's so good. And
it sounds,
you know,
delicious, man. It
oh,
really
man.
Does.
That, okay, so that's a good. So you're saying, okay, that's another thing I saw that they did. They took hamburger meat, and they put cream cheese, and they put them in mushrooms.
Yeah, stuffed mushrooms, those are good. Yeah.
But I looked at it, I was like, that's a skillet of cheesy meat. And I just give me some cheesy meat. That's a good idea. What do you think about using a seafood concoction inside the jalapeno? Because I had some with a certain kind of cheese. I don't think it was cream cheese, but it felt like cream cheese, and it had I think little shrimp and some other little things in it.
Have you heard of something like that?
The good thing about the ABTs is you can really stuff them with whatever you want. It's just like a vessel. And the most important part is to remember to wrap, whether you're doing them in halves or whole, is to wrap the pepper and bacon in order to, A, add flavor, because fat is flavor, bacon is flavor, mm-hmm. and, B, it's able to keep it moist. While the fat is rendering out, it goes into the pepper and through whatever you have it stuffed with, so it keeps everything nice and succulent in there, and it's really good.
I mean, yeah.
What if I don't have a grill? I don't have a grill. Can I do it on a pan?
Well, you can do them in the oven.
Okay. Tell me what I do. So how many minutes?
Do we need to have the whole recipe?
350 to 400 degrees roughly 30 minutes or so.
Okay, 350 degrees, 30 minutes. And I can stuff it with whatever the heck I want, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's whatever you have
in the
house.
What do you think about as far as different cheeses to use inside a jalapeno?
I've used cheddar cheese. I've used pepper jack cheese. We've used mustard cheese.
But something that's kind of smooth.
It all works. Any type of good hard cheese. If you can get a good brick of cheese, mm-hmm. and then you can cut it into shards and just jam the whole shard into the pepper or lay it on the half boat, and mm-hmm. it'll melt right and deliciously.
Wow.
But the cream cheese has just that finish that just, it's so soft, that finish. And I feel like...
Nice, silky texture.
Yeah, and I feel like I've had one that had like some kind of like that, but it wasn't. Do you think you can use mascarpone cheese, or is that too soft?
No, it all works.
If it works, it works.
I'm going to have to get my hands on some mascarpone cheese.
Look, what's the worst thing that happens? You have to eat something that you thought was going to be super. It's just okay, and you have bacon, which makes everything better.
Bacon always saves everything. And so guess what else we had? We had fried boudin balls. Have you ever had those?
Yeah, those are a delicacy.
Those things are ridiculous. So what do you think? Can I make my own boudin, you think?
Yeah, of course. It's sausage. So.
Well, yeah, but it's sausage, but it's mixed with like rice and cheese and some like jalapenos or something, right?
Yeah, that's like, I think like a Cajun deal.
Yeah.
So you can get to or Google any type of good Cajun forum, and they'll tell you how to make a good.
So basically, what
ball.
You're saying, Greg, is you don't know how to make them.
I don't personally know.
What good are you, man, other than barbecue?
Well, I'm a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
Listen. So what do you think? I mean, you barbecue man up in Ohio, because Ohio's known for its barbecue. What do you think about
the capital of the North Coast?
Okay. Well, listen.
The North Coast.
Look, Greg. I know.
Well, what's the North Coast?
Listen.
And you have to understand that Cleveland is just south of the Great Lakes, so
right.
That's the North Coast. So right. We're the barbecue capital of the North Coast.
Listen, Greg, listen, I have no doubt that you're not half-stepping when it comes to barbecue. I know you get your barbecue hat on, and I know you're barbecue man of the North Coast. But when it comes to Texas, what do you think about Texas barbecue?
Oh, it's certainly within the... Look, there's four regions of barbecue that will fight at the drop of a hat. Texas, you have North Carolina, South Carolina, you have Memphis, and you have Kansas City.
Okay.
Those are the most well-known, highly steeped in barbecue tradition regions of the country that you're ever going to find. Now, Alabama, of course, would want to be included, and Georgia would want to be included. But when you break it down and you look at the roots of American barbecue, those four areas and regions of the country are steeped within the barbecue tradition. And like I said, don't bring pork barbecue to Texas, because there's going to be a fistfight.
Oh, really?
Why is that?
Yeah, well, Texas is more known for the sausage and the beef brisket barbecue versus the ribs or the pork in general, where Kansas City, Memphis claim that they're the best pork. And, of course, Carolina is all about the pork shoulder, which goes into pulled pork. Mm-hmm. And from there, depending on where you're at, either in North or South Carolina, it's pulled or it's chunked or it's chopped. So, it's highly specialized.
Yeah.
No,
well,
that sounds really nice.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting.
I know the eyes glazing over.
Yeah.
Listen, I didn't know this, but I mean, I grew up in Texas, but I don't know anything about barbecue other than like, you know, it's around you. You have to
and
eat
she
it.
She likes to eat it. Yeah.
I don't actually love barbecue, but
some of the best barbecue pit manufacturers in the world, not just the country of the United States, but some of the best barbecue pit manufacturers in the world are in Texas.
Mm.
Yeah, my dad makes tons of brisket. I mean, brisket's kind of like a staple.
You could spend the better part of a month to 2 months going around and eating at all the best known, out of the way mom and pop barbecue places, and it's like gold every time you stop into the next place.
Wow.
Well, what about you up there in the North Coast? I mean, obviously you're the best because you're the only one. But does anybody try to...
I just host a radio show out here, and I talk to other people that are actually in the meccas of the barbecue region.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like you and your little in your neck of the woods up in Ohio. Who else would try to barbecue off you?
Who buys barbecue off me?
No, I'm trying to say, who would try to step up to Greg in the North Coast?
Oh.
Well, nobody. He's the expert, yeah.
There's nothing out here. I mean, it's aside from being a sports and a political and a jobless wasteland, it's a wasteland of barbecue. There's nothing out here.
How do you living out there?
It's great. I love it. Why do you think I never move?
I don't know. Maybe because you can't.
I can't. You're right.
Yeah.
But let's get into personal reasons, Sam, okay?
Yeah.
Look, all I'm saying is try the jalapenos, the atomic buffalo turds, because that's funny to say.
Yeah.
I will. I'm going to serve them.
It is funny to say. ABTs. We'll remember
that. Is there anything else I should Google and look? I know you don't want to give me all the recipes, but is there anything else you think I should make?
I was just going to tell you, when I was on with the homo, I gave him the recipe to the bacon explosion. Have you heard of the bacon explosion?
What is the bacon explosion?
Yeah. Okay, so this went viral on the internet, it'll be 2 years in December. Mm-hmm. But these guys started a website, they're called the Barbecue Addicts, and they came up with this recipe. So in the barbecue community, there's this thing called a fatty, and it's not a joint.
Mm.
But it's breakfast sausage log. And you can either just put it right on the smoker and smoke it until it reaches a certain internal temperature and cover it in barbecue rub, or you could kind of flatten it out and stuff it, right? Mm-hmm. So these guys took it to the next level. So what you do is you go get 2 pounds of really thick-cut bacon, and you lay out a basket weave, like a lattice bacon. Then you take the pound of sausage, and you flatten it out over the top of the bacon. And then you put another pound of crispy bacon inside of the breakfast sausage, and then cheese and barbecue sauce and rub.
Mm-hmm.
And then you roll it all up into like a jelly roll. So now you have this sausage and bacon torpedo.
Wow, man.
Or barbecue rub
sounds
on top
obscene,
of that. And
you
put it in your cooker and let it go until it reaches like 170 degrees internal temperature.
Yeah.
And there it is. That's the bacon explosion. You glaze it with some barbecue sauce. It's 5,000 calories per bacon explosion.
Yeah, it sounds like it, but wow, man.
That just sounds like a heart attack in a log, and I want it.
Yeah. I mean, but look, it just sounds absurd, but once you make it, and you have to make it for a party, because if you eat that by yourself, you're going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody will love
it.
They'll see it come off of the cooker, and they're like, holy crap, what is that? And you cut it up and serve it to everybody. And
do you cut it like in like little pinwheels? Do you cut it like in pinwheels? Okay.
Yeah.
Little sausage discs, and you're ready to go, man. I mean,
Greg,
doesn't get any better than the bacon explosion.
I think you're in a position to write a book, you know? I mean, you've got so much in you. Have you considered it at all?
No, just because I'm very lazy.
Yeah.
Have somebody else write it. Just talk.
Exactly.
You can actually get somebody to kind of transcript
like a
everything.
A ghostwriter or something.
Yeah, and you just tell them, hey, this is what I want to boom, boom, boom.
But you should. You definitely. I mean, look, you've put in so much time and effort into this, and obviously you have a great radio show where you can impart all this information. But I bet you it would do well as a cookbook or something. You know. I mean,
I'm going to look into that, goddammit.
Yeah, you got to, man. You got to. You know, you get some excitement.
You're
there
passionate
Cleveland.
About it. It's what you like doing. And, and you're getting me all excited and fired up. So I'm ready to go hump some bacon.
Yeah, he's going to hump the bacon.
Well,
Don't get Greg started there, man.
I always say that when it comes to food, because it's good.
Yeah. Well, Greg Rempe for you, everybody. Listen to Barbecue Central Tuesdays at 6 o'clock right here on LA Talk Radio Channel 1. And this was just a sample of what you're going to get. Greg, thanks so much, my friend.
Thanks, Greg.
We always love you calling in. And all the best to you, my man.
Take care. All right, guys. Have a good show.
You too. Bye-bye. I love Greg.
He's funny. Yeah. That's some good. Those are good ideas. I'm going to do those.
Yeah.
I always forget to use bacon.
I mean, it's 5,000 calories. Can you imagine?
Just don't eat the whole thing. Like, give it to people. Yeah. I mean, it's a good party thing.
It's like a shot of crack or something, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, if you're having a party, that's what you do. True. You don't put out celery sticks and say, hey, guys, thanks for coming over.
Yeah.
You give them a bacon freaking explosion.
Yeah.
And they'll come back.
Yeah. Well, get yourself a little barbecue, and then you can start making these things for people.
Yeah, I need to get some sauce and some rub is what I need.
Yeah.
I can get that, though. Sauce, rub, and I need to get a bunch of bacon and breakfast sausage.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. Yeah, I think I'm a little. I think I'm gonna do my jalapenos first.
Yeah, do those.
My atomic turd, whatever they're called.
Buffalo turds.
So gross. So disgusting. That's just like you're so ready to eat it, and somebody's like, "Here's your atomic buffalo turds. Hope you like them." And you're like, you know what? I'm good. I'm
buffalo
really good.
Turds for me, yeah.
Rups. Go, rups.
All right. Well, let's take a little break. I'm expecting this guy to call. Remember we talked to someone about the World Cup a couple weeks ago?
Oh, our World Cup, dude. Yeah, they're
so
doing...
So we're almost at the end of that, so it would be interesting. And then we have a guest coming in. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
On your computer, on your Wi-Fi radio, on your iPhone, commercial-free original talk, only on LA Talk Radio, your favorite talk station.
Radio Channel 1. To call in, dial 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815.
Okay, and we're back. I guess the news today is Lindsay Lohan is going to jail.
I know, I saw that.
You heard about that?
I saw a little bit about it, that she violated her probation or something like that.
Yes, she was supposed to go into alcohol consulting or something. That's what they call it.
Really?
And consultations, whatever. And okay, alcohol counseling sessions. So at any rate, she got 90 days in jail and then another 90 days in rehab. And she broke down and cried in court, and you know, but it seemed like, you know, with these actresses and stuff, mm-hmm. you don't know if it's real or not, you know. I mean, they know how to fake it pretty well. But regardless of, you know, I mean, you know, she thought she could get away with murder, this girl.
I think there's, unfortunately, there is that kind of mentality that people are just they think they're above it. You know, they've got the money, they've got a lot of people saying yes to them, and they, you know, mm-hmm. I think that they kind of get away with so much in like personal life,
mm-hmm.
and then they get to the legal element and they push it, and
it's like the law doesn't apply to her, you know, that's the way she's been behaving, and that sucks, you know. I mean, what is this?
Yeah, I really don't know the whole details on it, but it's just. It kind of seems like they're trying to make examples of girls like this, too. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, well, she, you know, originally she was pulled over for drunk driving. And then she was put on probation. And she missed, you know, the counseling and everything. And this is what she tells the judge. She says, I did do everything that I was told to do and did the best I could. Well, obviously, that wasn't good enough, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's what she said, that she did everything she could, but it wasn't...
Yeah. It was the best she could do.
What did she do to break her?
She just didn't go. She just didn't go. And, you know, she was on probation. She still is, I guess. Mm. So she was supposed to get all this treatment and everything, but, you know, apparently she didn't. And what's so difficult about that? You know, I mean...
Just go to your
Yeah,
thing.
Just go, for crying out loud, you know? I mean, what was she thinking? So it shows you, she doesn't have her head straight on at all. You know, but
she did say that. She said, I did the best I could. I did do everything I was told to do and did the best I could to balance jobs and showing up. Mm. It wasn't a vacation. It wasn't some sort of joke.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? She just didn't make. Okay. And this is somebody who cheats and thinks it isn't cheating if she doesn't get caught. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what the judge said.
Yeah. But you know what's cool? On TMZ this morning, they're showing you a picture. They took a close-up of her fingernails.
Yeah.
Did you see that? And it says, fuck you, on it.
Does it really?
On her fingernail, yeah, you can see it. They have a close-up of it. If you go to TMZ.com.
Yeah, I actually see it right here. Yeah. Well, good for her, I guess. Do you think that maybe they want to get caught?
Probably.
Like, she's
like a bad girl, you know?
I don't think anybody's a bad person. I think that they're just...
No, that kind of a bad girl.
Yeah, not
evil
saying.
Or anything,
yeah.
You know?
No, but it's kind of like, I think like with kids, you know, how they push the boundaries because mm-hmm. they want to know where
the boundaries
they want to know where things are. I might sneeze, y'all, but my roommate had a little bit of a cold and I ate a cookie after her.
Yeah?
She ate half of it and she gave it to me. And then she's like, oh, I have a cold, so I spit it out.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Then I spit out the cookie. She's like, that's not going to do anything. I was like, hey. But I actually think it's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway. But no, I think like with kids, they act up, they throw fits, they throw temper tantrums, and I think that they kind of want to know where the boundaries are.
And that's exactly what she's doing. You're right.
I mean, she's what, 22, 23?
Is she? I don't know how old she is, but yeah, probably something around there. And I don't know why the paparazzi are so enamored with her, because, you know, I don't think she's pretty at all. Do you think she's good looking?
I do think she's pretty. I just think she looks like she's wore out, though. She's got that whole I'm a 45-year-old divorcee look, and she's only 20 or 22.
She's got that collagen thing going on in
really?
Her lips. Yeah, you can tell.
Well, anyway, I think, unfortunately, for somebody that age and that is going through this, I really think her parents didn't do their job.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. If somebody's 22 and they're going to jail because they can't show up for probation.
Yeah.
And they are. They're an adult at that point. They're
Yeah, but she hasn't matured emotionally, obviously.
I just think that her parents, I think there's a lot of these parents that are just, they're parasites to their kids.
Yeah.
They live through them. They live off of them. They perpetuate their scandals because it gets them more press.
Yeah.
I mean, her mother had a reality show with her little daughter. Mm-hmm. I forgot. Allie, I think, is the daughter's name.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just short-lived, but it was kind of about Allie's new career. And Lindsay's past this, so she's not going to be in the reality show. And her mom's just loving it. I'm like, you're not really that special.
Yeah.
I think it's funny when they start giving reality shows to all these people that you just could give a crap about.
Yeah.
You're like,
well, both her parents are whacked out of their mind, you know. But you can't. So I'm not surprised she's like that. But and then there's this thing with Al Gore. Have you heard of that?
What is it?
That it's reported that he sexually abused a masseuse, and you know that he's divorcing his wife, right? Did you hear about that?
I'm going to say yes, because I should be on top of knowing things.
I wasn't on top of it either until I looked at the National Enquirer. And you know how truthful that is. But no, usually there's something to what they say. And apparently, he decided to dump her after 40 years of marriage.
Why? Because he's saving the environment?
Yeah, I guess, from her.
What's that about?
I don't know. I don't know why, but... you know, so apparently she's in a position to really, they're saying she's in a position, like she knows some stuff that could send him to jail. So if he like really irritates her, she could get him in big trouble.
You know, I don't know. I know people going through divorces. I know people that it's like, man, marriage is hard.
Yeah.
And I just think people.
And divorce is harder.
Is it?
Yeah. Divorce is harder, let me tell you. There's no winners in divorce.
Really?
Yeah, there's no winners. I mean, the kids lose, everybody else loses. So, the hell with that.
What if you don't have kids?
If you don't have kids, I guess it's a lot easier, you know? Unless you're very rich.
Well, I guess you're right. I think marriage is just hard. I can't understand it because I've never been there. But I do think that if you have to be with the same person for years and years and years and years and years, you get to know the ins and outs of them. Everything that was cute about them at first starts to annoy you.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, the way they used to wrinkle their nose was so cute. And now you just want to smack their nose. Like,
exactly.
I just think, though, it takes a lot of maintenance.
It does.
I think it takes so much work. And I think, unfortunately, people go into marriage and they are not equipped. They don't want to do that kind of maintenance.
Yeah.
And then
look, after 40 years, you know, they've obviously done something right for a while. And I can see after 40 years how you'd get really tired of someone, you know. That's a long time.
I know, but I just think a lot of people, it's like they just want to move on and be out of it. And I'm like, do you think it's going to really be better?
Mm.
You're going to get in another relationship eventually, possibly.
Yeah.
It's going to last, a couple of years. And you're going to have the same damn problems.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
If you don't work on yourself and push forward.
But you know, not necessarily. Because, you know, if you meet someone else and it's a different dynamic going on, then it's not necessarily true. You know, I mean, it could work out. And I've seen some people that in second marriages, they really lasted a long time, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know. It really makes me think long and hard about getting married.
Yeah, you should definitely start playing the field a little bit because you never know what's going to happen. You know?
I play the field. I spent the last 2 weeks with my ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
We had a great time. It was
Did you really? A lot of romance and stuff like that going on?
Yeah, it was more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say it was like we looked longingly in each other's eyes. It wasn't like that, but it was...
But you enjoyed each other's company.
Oh, my gosh. We had so much fun, mm-hmm. and we have kind of picked up where we left off a little bit and had a great time, and neither one of us is ready to do anything about it where we move or anything to be with the other person. But,
yeah.
But
if he moved down here, would you consider being with him?
We would be together, yeah.
Yeah, you would.
We
huh?
would be together, yeah.
Wow.
He's just an amazing man. I mean, there's really not a lot of people like him.
Mm.
He's a lovely, lovely person. Big character, big heart.
So how come you're willing to let that go?
Good question. I have dreams and I have visions of love. No, I don't want to go live in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Not that it's the middle of nowhere.
So he won't move, huh? He won't move here?
Not right now. He's really thriving in Houston, and he's got a great job, and he loves what he does, and he loves his life there, just like I love my life here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really fair right now to ask him to give that up.
It's not about asking him, but, you know, I mean, if he wanted to, he probably could.
I think he could, but I'm not going to try to convince somebody to do it either.
No, I'm not saying that you should. What I'm saying is it's got to come from him.
Exactly. And it hasn't. I mean, the thing is that, you know, I'm telling all our business. I bet he's listening right now. Sorry if you're listening. I told people, look, if you're going to be close to me, you just got to take a couple
be
bullets.
Careful, yeah.
You got to take a couple bullets. Well, here's the saga, you guys. So I moved out here when I met him when I was 19.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved out here when I was 20.
Right.
Okay? So we were together a year. We actually lived together and everything.
Oh, wow.
First everything. You know, he's that guy. And we totally fell in love. And, you know, when you're young, too, it's just like high, high, low, lows. Everything's really intense. And so then I moved. I moved out here, and I was like, I got to go after my dreams. Well, I moved out here 20 years old, no money, nothing, trying to make it happen. And, you know, no family and trying to get it together. And it was really hard. And those first, you know, 3 years, 4 years were just, I didn't even really go into anything that I've been doing that I want to do. I was just trying to survive.
Right.
And he was still in the picture and was there, but yet he wasn't going to move out there. He didn't really totally believe that I was committed to it. He didn't really believe it was my dream, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And long story short, we would fly back and forth periodically every few months.
Mm-hmm.
It went on and off for the next 4 years. And then 4 years later, I was 24, and we broke up.
Mm.
And I didn't see him until, like, pretty much, like, 3 years later.
Mm.
I saw him a year ago. And we went to dinner, and he actually had a girlfriend, and I was single. but then we stayed in touch for that last year, which would bring us to date. And he was with somebody, and I've had several boyfriends, and we've just become really good friends. And there's just a lot of love there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, time kind of prevailed, and he was like, let's do this fun trip. And I was like, okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
And you were going to Israel. I was like, let's do it. So we went, and all my friends came, so it was kind of a group thing.
Yeah.
And we had a great time, and it was kind of cool to reconnect with somebody that you've been in love with and to realize it's still there, and a lot of the stuff is still there.
Yeah.
Like the little language we do, you know, your little love language, and the way that we snug, like we, you know, kiss and hug and all that stuff, and it's cuddly, and it's all the same stuff.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So it's there, but I don't know. I kind of feel like, you know, maybe I need to be single for a while to really focus on the things I want to do, and then there it'll be there when the right time is.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of people, it's so comfortable to be with somebody that loves you, but I feel like it can kind of immobilize you.
Yeah.
Especially for women. I think women, when they fall in love, they put all their focus on a man. It just, it's even if they don't want to be that person. I mean, I don't really want to do that, but I find myself doing that. It's like, what do you need? What do you want? And you love that person, and you try to make a home for that person. You try to comfort that person. And I think what happens is everything that the woman really wants in life goes out the window.
Mm.
And I do believe that once you say I do to another person and you actually bring kids in the world, that those things become priority.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they have to in order to survive.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's different when you have kids and everything. You know, it's just like, it's not the same. It's not the same. That's why you should build up the romance first, I think.
Yeah, and I agree. So that's kind of where I am with everything. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to force it right now. But you know, I know that there's still genuine love there, and he, like, if I was on my deathbed or something, he's somebody I'd want there.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know if that's nice or not. Is that,
if you say so.
My friend's texting. My friend, she's listening to the show right now, and she wrote, "You will marry him." She goes, "Put away all the feminist rhetoric, bull." Oh, that's funny.
Maybe you will marry him. Who knows?
Who knows? I'm not in a rush though, and that's okay. Yeah. It's okay. I mean, I've got a lot of stuff I want to do, man.
So he doesn't have a girlfriend right now?
Not right now. And he, you know what? He wants me hardcore.
He does.
Mm-hmm. But he wants me in Texas, and I'm like, sorry, ain't gonna happen. I'm not gonna happen. I'm not gonna go there and live there. It sucks. I love Texas, but everything I want to do is here.
Yeah.
Right now, until I make it huge, and then I can have houses everywhere.
What about that Oprah thing? Did you ever go?
I did. I didn't get it.
I'm
here. It was interesting. I went, and there was
They already made the decisions?
No. There was about. They did it. They did all these nationwide. Competition where you can go and pitch your idea for a show,
right?
And every place they chose was cool because it wasn't like LA, New York, Chicago. It was kind of a little bit off the beaten path where it was something that a lot of people flew in for the audition, got hotels, and I actually had friends that lived in Laguna Niguel that mm-hmm. I got to stay with, thank God. And I just drove down. And a lot of people, they had to get a hotels and rent a car and all that stuff. So it was really cool. I showed up, and there was, it's one of those huge cattle calls.
Right.
And I mean, just thousands of people were there.
Wow.
And it was, but they did a really good job. It was very manageable. They gave you a number. You came back at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're, when it's your turn, you get in a group of about 15, and you literally have 30 seconds to pitch your idea for a show.
Yeah.
Well, for me personally, I didn't have an idea that was novel. It was more of a personality-driven show where I would want to do like a late-night show for Oprah's new talk show. Oprah, if you're listening, you know,
yeah,
and
she's got nothing else to do but listen to Karen.
Yeah, come on, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I pitched a late-night show and I did it really funny. I brought because everybody was like kind of lame.
Mm-hmm.
They had really cool ideas, but not necessarily their personality. And I started talking, then I brought up this round hairbrush like it was a microphone, and I tapped it like, is this thing on? And then I went into my pitch.
Uh-huh. So you did stand-up. That's what you did.
Kind of, a little bit. But I did it, and I did it as my show would be called Living Vicariously.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that cute? Got a little ring. It'll happen. It will happen. Just may not happen on Oprah's show.
Not on Oprah's channel.
Just not on Oprah's show, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But you know what? It was a great experience because the people that I was kind of surrounded with were all really cool people.
Mm-hmm.
They're really cool people.
Yeah.
It just
who the contestants?
Everybody
or the,
that yeah, because everybody had a lot of heart. The people that I mean, I've done other auditions where it's music or it's comedy, and that's such a different crowd. Each one is, you know, when you're at the music audition, everybody's like working on their voice, and they're just so just like shut up. And the comedy people, everybody's trying to outdick the other person and be dickyish, you know, like I'm funnier than you. And this was like everybody had an idea for a show, and there's so much heart.
Right.
Really good people. So it was a great experience.
Yeah.
And you know, I have to stand by what I believe. And what I believe is that the odds were against everybody, and the odds were in favor for everybody. I mean, it was literally so many people. So
the odds were against everybody.
Exactly. And so my point was is like, you know, I believe that if it's what you're supposed to do, if it's the right thing for you, it'll happen. And if it's not, then that's okay. You move on and it'll work out.
I don't think they'll find someone doing it this way, you know? I really don't.
Well, there's a lot of – people had a lot of different ideas. Some people said, are they really – because it's 30 seconds. They're like, come on. They said, are they really looking for – are they canvassing America for new ideas for shows and they're going to take those ideas? Because you do waiver.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sign a waiver. Are they looking for talent?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they looking to see what – America is looking for as far as what does America want to see as shows.
Maybe it's all of these
things. And it could be everything. But the thing is you really don't know if you never really know on the other end what they're looking for. But they are creating a show that is going to be a reality show on the Oprah Winfrey Network for the person to have as a reality competition to have their next show.
Right.
So it's kind of a collective thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's cool.
Yeah.
They didn't choose me. That's okay. Because I'm here at LA Talk Radio, but I'm happy. Life is good, man.
There you go, you know? So take that ambition and
I'm doing great, though. I'm happy, man.
Yeah.
I got nothing else.
Yeah, you
got
to lower the bar a little bit, you know? I mean, you can't, like, go, I'm going to be the next Oprah, you know? People have to, you know, and that's what all these people that are going for this seem to think, like, it's going to happen overnight. It doesn't.
But things do happen overnight sometimes.
They do not.
Look at YouTube, man.
Not.
There's a lot of things that do. I mean, it's not necessarily normative, but the reality is you see American Idol and you see things and you go, wow, that person has a career now.
Yeah, but
it's not everybody.
But you don't know what they've been through before they got on American Idol.
No, but it's kind of like the Joe Schmoes that, you know, it came to them. And I mean, I'm just saying there's many different paths to get to that place.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, it's instantaneous. And for some people, it's hard work that they've been doing nonstop day and night. And then they get the break. And some people, it's random. And you just, there's not a blueprint, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So because there's not a blueprint, you kind of have to be open.
Yeah.
And so for me, did I want to wait in line and kind of try to pitch myself in 30 seconds?
Yeah.
No.
I'm telling you that even if Oprah, and she was an unknown, and she tried to pitch for 30 seconds,
yeah, it's
kind of
unreal. It's
it.
Unrealistic.
It is. So I think what they're trying to do is just get a feel for who you are and what you like. You know?
Yeah,
it's not
I feel like I did a good
it's
job.
It's not about the pitch, you know. It's
and
just,
what was kind of bullshit is that they, you know, they have these like interns. You know, they're not even producers. They're like interns that look 20. This girl was like 21, and she's sitting down there at a desk, and who knows what she's been told to look for or what she can allow to go on, who she can allow to go on. But she's sitting there and she's like 21, and she's, you're like, really? This little girl is going to have a say? It's just really funny. You're like, yeah, this 10-year-old is going to, okay. Well, I got to do what I got to do. Yeah. But we didn't really connect, because I think it's important when you're doing whatever, that you get, you connect with your audience and you really connect with the person that is has the power.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And we didn't really connect. It wasn't bad. We didn't connect. I made a joke with her and she didn't get it.
So how long did you have to wait?
I mean, I got there at like 5 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was done by about 1.
Really? So you had to go and come back or what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
I was done probably about noon.
How many people do you think were there?
This competition.
Like thousands?
There's a couple thousand.
Really?
Maybe about 2,000. But that's not that much for open calls. But they did it in a strategic place where you could not, if they did in L.A., they would have had so many people do it. They would have had like 20, 50,000 people.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been ridiculous. And think about how much work that is for them.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do it in a place like Laguna Niguel, they know that people that are really, really serious about it will drive in or fly in.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have to make some effort.
Yeah.
You know?
Can you imagine flying in there and just for 30 seconds, for crying out loud? People
I
are
mean,
crazy.
I don't think it's crazy if you have a dream. When you have a dream, the thing is dreams are unrealistic.
Right.
And so
you got to make your dream realistic.
No,
you know?
But that's the reality. Hear me out. Dreams are not practical. That's why they're dreams. They're not realistic. That's why they're dreams. And so trying to be realistic and trying to be practical is not the right approach. You have to go all out for those dreams.
I think it's crazy.
If you have something that you want to do, like Microsoft or whatever, you have to go to the ends of the earth and you have to go all in debt, whatever that looks like, chips all in. And you go, you know what? This is what I believe. It's burning inside me. And this is, I've got to see it through. And I might fail a million times before I succeed. And that's what makes people different than the people that don't succeed.
Yeah. Well, that's why they're all poor.
Well, you don't even know if they're all poor. You don't know if they're all poor. That's a blanket statement.
Well, no.
People
that live on dreams are poor, I think.
You know? Maybe they are until they make it.
Because like you said, dreams are not, you know, they're not realistic, and therefore you're not going to pay your bill.
But listen, Sam, I mean, look at some of the most motivational, the most inspirational people that have produced great music, great art, whatever. They weren't all fucking rich before they made it.
No, I'm not saying they were, but
they
at the
went
same time,
in. They
I
went...
think they were practical in what they were doing. You know?
Jewel lived in her car, Sam. Mm-hmm. She lived in her car and was homeless.
Okay, but how many people do you know like that?
No,
you know
but my that's my you don't. That's okay. My point is people that want to do something extraordinary in life, sometimes they have to say I don't to all these other things in life, and they say I do to this, and they make a huge sacrifice, and just to hope that it can come true. And you know what? It takes more courage to do that. And that's why most people don't do it. I go back home to Texas and
It courage. I don't know.
Well, I mean, we're looking at it differently, but I go back to Texas and guess what? Everything's mapped out for people. You graduate high school, you go to college very quickly, because if you don't...
No, but these are two extremes. I mean, there's got to be somewhere in the middle, you know, where your dreams.
Everybody's got a different path. I mean, for some people, I'm not saying give up everything in life and lose relationships and go broke. I'm saying, but there's not a one size fits all. I mean, for some people, what they want to do requires everything from them. And sometimes for some people, that means I got to look like a loser now, because later there's bigger things, because they're saying I don't to a bunch of things right now.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, shooting for the top, like an Oprah type of a thing, is definitely not realistic. And I don't think anybody's going to make it. The people that are, or the person that is going to make it, is someone who's paid their dues. You know, if you want to have like a talk show.
But look
or something,
at American Idol.
The first
Those
thing
kids
you want to do.
Look, they didn't
the
pay their thing, dues.
But American Idol is just one place. I mean, it's like, what are the odds, you know? That's what
no,
I'm saying.
No, but my point is that some people look at that, Sam.
But if you want a talk show, what you got to do is, first of all, do something and put it on YouTube, you know? I mean, show that you have
hey,
it in
I'm
you.
Hey, I'm not
you
disagreeing
know?
With the... Yeah. With the, I'm not... Look, I'm not disagreeing.
But just to say, okay, I'm flying to L.A. just to audition for 30 seconds for an Oprah show, I think is ludicrous.
Well, it is ludicrous. We're not disagreeing on it. But the reality is it takes faith. And for some people... For some people, you're right. They need to do those practical steps, and it will happen. Like, use the resources that you have, utilize what's around you, and that's one way to get going. And for some people, it's like, you know what? This is the opportunity that's presented itself. It's right there. I'm going to go for it. And who knows if I'll get another opportunity. And guess what? You know what you do? You know what you do not have is you don't have regrets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing. I know a lot of people with a lot of money have a lot of regrets. I do. I know people that...
And you think the people that don't have money don't have regrets?
No, it's not that... No, it's not, I'm not looking... See, you're looking at it all through the eyes of financial, and I'm saying I don't view financial as what makes somebody successful or not. It's did you live your life to the fullest? Did you do everything that's in your heart that you feel like you're meant to do? Mm-hmm. Regardless of your freaking bank account.
Right.
Just throw it aside for 1 second.
That's not what I'm talking about. Living a life, you know? I mean, it's like not living in your car. I don't get it.
What do you mean?
Get living in your car.
Well, look at Jewel now. She had to say no to a bunch of things. I'm not saying purposely go live in your car. That's stupid. I don't know if some people, what people have to do. I don't really know if some people, you know, need to go all out for their dream, and that means they have all these things that they don't do, and they're hoping against hope. And then for some people, you know what? They have a regular job and they do their thing on the side. But I do think, whatever it is that's in your heart, if it's burning like that, you need to be willing to sacrifice everything for it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people aren't.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying you need to, you know, like, you don't necessarily have to, you know, destroy your bank account or whatever. But for some people, it's like, you know, a lot of people don't do extraordinary things because it's not realistic and they're not willing to suffer for their dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm saying.
Right.
And I'm not, that's really the heart of what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So. And when I've gone back home, I've had people tell me, you know, because I've waited tables, I've done all these crazy jobs that are, I mean, you don't brag about these jobs. I mean, I make mm-hmm. jokes about the jobs because they're funny. And I've had people tell me, you know what, I'm just jealous that I'm not a waitress in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And instead, I'm actually in a job I hate in Texas, but I'm too afraid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I'm not like a huge success, but I've definitely had some success. I think being here is a success. And mm-hmm. I mean, you know. There's a lot of things, if I'd have done things differently, I wouldn't be here right now.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think you need to take baby steps. And I think the dreams of, like, getting to the top right away, very, very...
It sounds like what you're saying is kind of like... I think what you're saying is, like, and I kind of agree, is people that are just wanting the... They're just wanting the glory of it all.
Right, exactly.
And they're not willing to do it. Well, I think we're kind of a semantics thing because mm-hmm. I do believe that you're saying do the hard work, mm-hmm. boom, 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 for your dream,
right.
as opposed to just, oh my gosh, I'm going to be the next big thing.
Right.
And I'm kind of saying the same thing as far as like the suffering part. Like, you know, you take the shitty jobs. You do this. You stay up late. You go to the gigs. You go to another gig. I mean, that's all this kind of the same thing, but there's a suffering involved on some way, shape, or form because you're having to sacrifice.
Yeah, sacrifice.
And you're saying these people that live in wherever that have never really made it a priority in their life mm-hmm. are now all of a sudden going to try to be the next big thing. I kind of think it's shallow, too.
Mm.
I do.
Yeah.
I think that that's kind of like, you know, you've lived your life in a certain way. It's obviously not, it may not be a priority for a lot of people if they're not willing to move or relocate, you know, and...
Right.
Do the things they need to do to make it, or you know, show that that this is a priority.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's got to be some kind of like viability to it. You know?
I mean, I agree with that. I agree that, you know, people that are like, oh, it's coming to me now, and now I deserve.
What I see a lot
it's like
of.
An entitled kind of attitude.
Yeah, I see a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's like, well, if you really, you know, but then I also believe that living in because I come from a small town, it's really hard for people that have been taught that this is the way you're supposed to live. And then they just don't believe. I mean, it really is a mentality that you just don't believe big things can happen for you.
Right.
It's like you've been told this is what you do. You get married, you have kids, or you go to school and you get that job that pays you, you know, a base salary, 9 to 5, and you live for the weekend. And I believe, you know, part of growing is looking past it and looking bigger and actually taking a step of faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a huge thing. I mean, even biblically in the Bible, and in the Torah, it talks about Abraham, and God told Abraham.
How the fuck did we get to the Bible?
Well,
now?
Because there's a cool.
Okay,
we both,
go on.
Well, you believe in the Torah. I mean, you read the Torah.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't bring it up on every conversation. We're talking about something else right now.
Well, no, this
but
applies.
But go ahead.
Go with it. It applies. And I'm not beating you down. I'm telling a story, and you can believe it or not. But there's a great principle.
Right.
Is that Abraham? He had a lot of wealth. He had a lot of great things. And God said, Abraham, come out of the tent and come outside and look at the stars. And he had to look at the stars. And God said, look at at how these stars are. They're innumerable. You can't measure them. He goes, try to count them. You can't. And he said, that's how much I'm going to bless you with your descendants. Mm-hmm. And God was speaking not just in the natural, but supernatural, that, you know, descendants of faith and people that, you know, he's going to have an effect on. And he said, now get your stuff and go. He said, go. Mm-hmm. And Abraham didn't know where. He didn't know how. He didn't know the details. He just knew he had to step out in faith. He had to go.
Right.
But what's cool about that is that's what kind of God does with us, is he draws us out of our tent, whatever that is, and he has us look up at the sky and dream. And he says, look, I want to do something big in your life. And it may not be in the way we think or the way other people think, but he has to open up our hearts and our minds to dream. And then he says, now go. And we don't know where or how. And we have to trust him. We have to lean on God for those, for direction. And I mean, I think that that's a beautiful, romantic, you know, example of how God wants to
exactly,
stir.
Exactly, a fairy tale.
Well, I mean, that's look, exactly really, is it a fairy tale?
Yeah.
Look at you.
I mean, it's nice stories.
Look at you. You moved from Israel. Your parents moved you over here.
Yeah, so.
And you did a bunch of jobs. You got a lot of great skills. And you're like, I hate this. I want to do, my dream is to have a radio show.
Well, you know, but that's the thing, is I did something that was attainable, you know, not...
But it was
not,
still a dream,
not say
right?
I'm going to be Howard Stern
no,
tomorrow.
But it was still a dream, though, right? Something you really wanted to do.
Yeah, but like I said, again, you know, I mean, yeah, I would love to be Howard Stern, but I'm not going to expect
no,
that I would be
like,
the next
I don't mean
day.
Like a dream in the sense of like some selfish ambition.
But that's what we're talking about. No,
well, you
we
are.
Talking
I'm
about the Oprah thing.
Yeah, well, I'm saying some people have a real drive to do that, and then mm-hmm. some people it's just some vanity.
Yeah,
I mean, there are people that are like, I want to do this because it's cool and I want fame. I mean, I know those people. I live in LA. There's a lot of people here for the wrong reasons, and they're not going to really make it, and they may get somewhere for a little bit, and they're going to die off because it's selfish ambition and it only gets so far,
right?
But then some people have a real burning passion that they want to actually do something bigger than themselves.
Yeah,
you know.
Okay, I'll go with that. Okay, we're going to take a break. Hopefully our guest is here, and we'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Above and beyond. are open on Sam and Kara in the Morning. Pick up your phone and jump in on the conversation. Dial 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815 and get in on the fun. Now, let's get back to Sam and Kara in the Morning on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, and we're back, and we have Nick Nolan in the studio. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Sam.
Yes,
Nick Nolan in the house. I just like the name.
Yes.
I like it. Nick
it is
Nolan
a pretty cool
in the
name,
house.
Huh? Okay.
The end.
Yeah.
It's
it sounds like a secret agent or something, you know?
Well, I've been a secret author up until this point, so
right. There you
flying
go.
Under the radar.
Yeah. So you're coming out as an author.
Yes, yes.
There you go.
And I have to say, Kara, you're so pretty.
Oh my gosh, you just thank you so much. You're so sweet. If anybody says that, I don't care if it's fake or real. I instantly
You'll
love
take
them.
It,
I'll
huh?
take that shit.
Yeah.
I'll take it. I'm in my workout clothes. I'm gonna go work out because I've been eating Texas style. But anyway. Back to you, Nick Nolan.
Yeah. So, are you an L.A. native?
Yes, yes.
You
I
were born here,
born
right?
and raised in Glendale, California.
Really?
Yes, which is one of the most, or at least in the 60s, was one of the most conservative neighborhoods in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's true. And did you ever move away from here and come back, or is this pretty much...
No, I've been stuck here.
Stuck here for all your life.
By choice, so. You know, grew up and then met my partner back in 1987, and at one point we were thinking about relocating someplace else. But, you know, especially if you're gay, you have to look for a community where everybody's going to be supportive and we don't have to look over your shoulder all
the
time.
So you don't want to be in a conservative community. That's definitely...
Or Texas.
Or Texas. Or Florida.
Yeah. Or is Florida bad, too?
Oh.
I thought that they had a really big gay population in West Palm
South
Beach.
South Beach.
South Beach.
Yeah. But I think that's sort of the oasis, so to speak.
That's not a conservative place for sure, you know?
No, not that area. I'm just wondering. So, but then there's San Fran.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then I'm trying to think. Is there any other gay, huge gay? Dallas is kind of.
Sure. You know, we've been thinking about Provincetown and. You know, at some point or Palm Springs. We were just down there this past weekend.
Mm.
But we're pretty happy where we are. We like LA.
Yeah.
LA's fun.
Yeah, LA's cool. You know, I mean, it's just unusual to find people that were born here. You know, it's everybody seems to have moved here from somewhere.
Now, was he native here? Or?
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, that's even a double crazy.
Yeah.
Fluke, because normally for people listening, everybody moves to LA if you didn't already get that, and you know, it just people don't crop up here. They don't get brewed here.
Yeah.
Normally, right?
Now, what about you all?
Texas and.
Israel.
Yeah. Israel, you got to say with gusto.
Israel.
And Sam, how long have you been here?
So I'm doing the interviewing, so relax. Okay.
Sweet.
All right. In fact, I'm celebrating 34 years this week.
34 years?
4th of July is when I got here in 1976. So, yeah, that was the bicentennial, actually.
Yeah,
and now we're
deal.
234 years. So, 34 years, man. So I'm pretty excited about that. But back to you. So so you grew up here in a conservative. At what point did you realize you were gay?
I would say probably when I was 12 or 13.
Really?
Yeah. And it was really tough in my house because my parents were extremely, and they still are extremely conservative. This was just something that was completely off limits. I mean, you know. If there was a gay person on television, you know, my father would say, "Oh, look at the fairy guy," and you know, things like that. So it just you know, and they're cool with it now. I mean, they're fine.
But it's probably taken a long time.
It took a long time. It actually took 10 years before my mother would even set foot in my partner's in my house.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, so but let's go back. So at 12. You realized you were attracted to other boys and stuff? Okay.
Yeah.
And did you act on it at all?
Well, you know, there's that boy play that's kind of natural. It's just that it seems like other boys outgrew it, and I never did.
You never did.
That's funny.
But one thing that happened, I remember when I was 13 or 14 maybe, was I was at church one day, and there was a little note in the pew that said, prayer to St. Jude, and if you say this prayer every day in church for 10 days, then whatever you pray for will come true. So I took that little slip of paper and put it in my pocket, and I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do these secret trips to the church. And it was about 4 miles away, and it was uphill the whole way. And I remember I did it 4 times. Mm-hmm. I made it to the church and back 4 days in a row. And on the fifth day, I just thought, no, it's too much effort. And I'm still wondering maybe if I'd done it the full 10 days, if it would have worked.
Were you praying?
What were you praying for?
To be straight.
To be straight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Wow. So so you knew you were going to have problems with this.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. So you're starting to realize something is different about me and so forth. And, I mean, did you, when you were younger, did you play doctor with girls and things like that, or was there ever...
I actually had numerous relationships with women as an adult.
Oh, as an adult.
Yeah, so it wasn't, and that's why I think it was a little bit more difficult for me, because for some guys, you know, they never go to the other side. It's, and, you know, for hetero guys, they're always with women, and with gay guys, they're always with men, but I played both sides for a few years, and so it was tough. Because I really didn't want to disappoint my family. I didn't, you know, and I wanted to have kids and all this. But at one point I just thought, okay, this is how it is. And that was actually part of that whole process is what I put in my first book, Strings Attached, because Jeremy Tyler is a 17-year-old who's going through that same process where he has a girlfriend and, you know, he's looking for that one piece of the missing piece of the puzzle that's going to make his life work. Mm-hmm. And he meets this beautiful girl and, you know, everything is going along swimmingly, but there's still that piece that's missing and he's just not being authentic.
Right.
So the book is a lot about his struggle.
Right. And we'll get to the book in a minute, but I wanted to ask you, so, because it fascinates me because, you know, for a 12, 13-year-old, it's very difficult, you know, because you don't even have your identity yet. You don't know who you are. And then you feel you have certain feelings and certain tendencies, but you know there's something wrong with it because that's not what other people are doing,
right.
You know. And so, you lived in secret for a while as far as what's going on. At what point did you decide, okay, I'm going to tell my parents?
That's a good question. I think it was when I was 25, I had broken off an engagement with a girl.
Really? So it took till you were 25?
Yeah. Until wow. I was sexually active with men, you know, all through my teens,
right.
but also with women at the same time. So it was, you know, again, there was that conflict, but it was finally when I was 25 and I realized there's only one authentic me and I need to just be honest and come to grips with it. So that was it was at that
did
point.
Did you feel you were living a lie, like during your teen years, or
you know, you try on this identity when you're a teenager, and all teenagers do that, whether they're you know, no matter what they're struggling with or how many how well they fit in with society naturally, everybody tries on identities, and so I did that.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I was on a plane to Houston, and I was talking to this dude, you know, burly dude. He's from Texas, all Texas stuff, and we were chatting it up. I was like, this guy's kind of cute, you know. I don't have any DAR, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have a gay heart on. But I was like, you know, he's rugged, and we're just sitting there talking and chatting it away. And
how come I never get pretty girls to sit next to me on a plane, you know? It occurred to me, every time I'm on a plane, I get some old man sitting next to me, and there's nothing to say, nothing to do.
Well, they know you're married, don't they?
It has nothing to do with it. Good.
Well, no, we were talking, and he just said how much he loved Texas, and we were talking. I was going to Austin. He told me places to go check out, and he said, yeah, he's always felt like a fish out of water living in Texas, and I kept thinking, well, you look so Texas, and you got that Texas vibe. Like, I didn't understand why, and then I was thinking secretly he's probably gay, but I didn't get the gay vibe at all, and then he kept saying, yeah, it just didn't work out for him living there, and da-da-da-da, and then I said, oh, do you mind me asking him, are you homosexual, and he's like, I like to say gay, because I guess, is that offensive to ask somebody if they're homosexual?
Well, it's sort of like
the
calling an African American a Negro. You know,
is it? Because I didn't know that.
Yeah,
so.
A homosexual. It's very clinical and kind
okay,
of,
so sterile, so say gay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I said, okay, I'm sorry. I said, are you gay? He goes, yeah, I'm gay.
I mean, but is it okay to ask someone that? I don't think it is.
I asked him in a nice way. I said, do you mind me asking? And I think he knew by that point I wasn't judgmental because we were chatting.
Yeah, but if the guy's straight, he's going to be offended when you ask.
But I kind of knew context clues because.
So if you did, why would you ask? You know, if you knew.
Because
why
I wanted him to be able to be open in the conversation of why he didn't like Texas it seemed like there was something he wasn't sharing.
I think your gaydar works better than you thought, Karen.
Well, there you go. Well, he just had that. He had the dude. You know, like some guys are more effeminate, and some men are more. You know, they've got more of that burly side going.
Yeah,
on.
But you could just tell. You could look in somebody's eyes and see if they're into you. And what straight guy wouldn't be into you?
Oh, thank you. I love him. But no, I tell you, I thought two gay dudes had crushes on me one time when I waited tables for a long time, and they were in a relationship. And I was like, man, I died a slow death because they didn't have, I don't know. But then I saw it later. Maybe being in LA, it's gotten better. But what he did tell me was we started dialoguing about his story. Anyway, long story short, he said he was in relationships. And then he said he got to where he'd always be a jerk to the girl and wanted her to break up with him. And he said, I don't know why I kept doing it. Finally, he said, I was with the best girl, beautiful, sexy, whatever. And that, you know, he had to end things. He goes, maybe I'm gay. And he said, nothing happened for years after that. But then finally, he did get into a relationship with a man. And he said everything that he didn't experience with her, he said something clicked. And there was a connection there that, you know, I felt what it felt like to be in love.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so for you, I guess what I'm asking is your experience dating women and then that versus, you know, with a man. I mean, I know sexuality is complicated. So do you find that the love component came in, or was it more sexual, or
it's more sexual. I mean, there were women that I loved and that I still love from back then. But it's when you have that first kiss and your ankles start tingling, and you go, okay, now I get all the love songs. I understand what they were talking about. So I really believe it's how we're wired,
right.
And some people are wired to be hetero, and
some
of us are just gay or lesbian,
right?
You know.
Now, during your teen years, I mean, did you have that pressure that you know, that desire to tell your parents and to come out and
oh God, no.
No,
absolutely not. No. I mean, my father was active in the John Birch Society, which is an arch-conservative organization,
wow.
And it's still around today.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, really, really arch-conservative. They were anti-segregation. They were for George Wallace for president, anti-feminist rights, anti-civil rights, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not making this up, and I'm not throwing stones. It's just that's how they are.
Yeah. You meant anti-desegregation, right?
Anti-desegregation. Thank
right,
you. Thank
yes.
you. So that was, I mean, I was terrified. Plus,
my
father was this huge, he was actually a boxer and a bodybuilder.
Wow.
He played All-American quarterback. And so, you know, I was, of course, afraid for my life.
But you wished you could, right? I mean, you wished to be accepted as you were.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody wants that. You know, everybody wants that... reassurance that who we are is our authentic self will be accepted
right.
by others.
Mm. Wow. So now at 25, you finally realize that's it. You know, I'm going to come out. I'm going to tell them. You know, I know who I am now, and so forth. So how did that come about? How did you do that?
You know, you just make that decision like any other decision you have to make,
mm-hmm.
and you just say, okay, enough is enough. So I did it, and it was extremely, extremely difficult. And
what'd you do? You sat him down and you said, I have something to say to you. And
well, I actually told my mother, I'll back up a little bit. I had told my indicated that there was a tendency to my father years before that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd said, okay, well, I'll help you out with therapy. And he never helped me out with therapy. You know, I paid for it myself, which was that was the way my parents were. But and then I finally told my mom one day, and I can still see standing out in the backyard and telling her. And the next day my dad came out to my work, and he said, your mother's on the verge of a nervous breakdown, and if she has to go into the hospital, it's going to be your fault. And at that time, I had a great therapist at that point, and so we had kind of role-played all this. And I looked at my dad, and I said, well, you're her husband, so that's your responsibility to see that she gets the help she needs. And that was that.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. Figure it out.
Wow.
Figure it out. You can't carry everybody's cross, man. You got one in this life to carry. You can't carry anybody else's.
Wow.
Figure it out.
So he put all this on you, right?
Yeah. And then for about 10 years after that, I would get these manila envelopes in the mail from the Change Ministries, the Catholic Change Ministries. There's a guy named Father Nicolosi, Joseph Nicolosi. And he has all this stuff. And we all know by this point how good the Catholic Church is about things like homosexuality and
pedophilia.
And being honest. So
they don't got a good track record.
Yeah. So I used to just, you know, chuck the mental envelopes in the, you know, in the trash. And, yeah. And my partner and I would go down to West Hollywood and, you know, kick up our heels.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you with the same guy now?
Yeah, 23 years.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah, he's
that's
a great
long,
guy.
There you go. I mean,
long.
I think that's genuine.
We were just talking about, like, relationships and marriage and how it's like, man, a lot of people, it's like they just hit the wall. And we were just talking about how getting past, you know, how we were talking about relationships. It's like, seems for longevity, it takes away more maintenance than people realize going into it.
It does, but the payoff is so great.
Yeah, well, tell us about that. What do you think about as far as maintenance and...
Oh, my God. Well, number one, you have to learn how to say you're sorry. Mm. You have to also have a good sense of humor. You have to find somebody. For one thing, it's all about the selection process, I think, in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And Jamie and I went on our first date, and I just knew that that this was it. You know, I was living in a loft in downtown L.A., and we sat up on the roof of the loft, and we looked out over the city, and I had never felt better than how I felt with him during that.
Right.
That date, and we've been together ever since. And
wow.
And yeah, that was back in 1987.
Really?
But so the selection process, saying you're sorry, really working hard together. We've built a wonderful life together, and we have dogs. And you have to have dogs because when you're ready to kill each other,
yeah.
You look down at that smiling face and the wagging tail, and you just go, okay, you know.
That's funny. You gotta have a dog.
You gotta have a dog.
That's funny.
Yeah, good idea. I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. That's funny. Have a dog?
No, we don't have a dog. Yeah. But I'll take his advice.
How long have you
maybe
married?
If we get in trouble, we'll get a dog.
You've been married only like 5 years, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe not a dog yet, but you'll look into one.
Nah.
Go to a rescue. No. Get a rescue.
I love dogs, but I don't think I can live with one.
You don't want one wagging
yeah.
its tail around the
In
house.
Fact, you know, I mean, I lived with a couple of dogs when I had my kids and everything. When I lived with my kids, and I don't know, you know, all that shitting on the floor and the dog hair everywhere and I don't know. It's just not for me, you know.
Well,
not
for me. There is a way to housebreak dogs.
No, I know, but you know. So then you got to take them out and pick up their shit and
know,
put it in the
I
bag
know.
And. Oh my God! You know it's too much. But no, I love dogs, and I totally can relate to people who have dogs. So you're saying it helps a relationship?
Oh,
right?
absolutely.
Yeah. I like that. That's what they all need. Get married, get a dog.
Yeah.
I'll let people know. That's the secret. So, but as far as 23 years of being together, I mean that's outlasts so many people.
Oh, I know.
Especially in LA, that's like 100 years. So,
really?
I mean, congratulations to you guys.
Thank you.
But so apart from the dog, I mean, you're saying the selection process and then being able to laugh.
Yes.
Okay.
Sense of humor.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's good
as
to know.
You know.
Yeah.
You gotta have laughter, I think.
Yeah, and then also if you're building a life together, you're saying, well, you know, you have this unspoken understanding that we're always going to be trying to make our lives better.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's, if you can see growth and you can get, you know, we stand back at this point, we look back and we go, my goodness, look how far we came. I mean, when we first met, I was working full time. I was carrying 15 units at college, mm-hmm. and I did that for a year and a half. And I was so poor, I had, I know this sounds like the Little Match Girl story, but I had holes in the bottom of my shoes.
Wow.
And I used to have to, when I went to work, I would have to, I cut out cardboard inserts, and then I colored them in with a Sharpie, because I worked actually right down the street in a nice antique store, and I was afraid that my well-heeled clients would see me walking up the stairs ahead of them and see that I had holes in my shoes.
Wow.
But I went a year and a half with one contact lens and no car insurance, no medical insurance, and I used to have no food when I would go to work every day, and I would rely on my coworkers basically to bring in leftovers for me.
So, I mean, how did you get to that point? Why were you so down on your luck as far as financially?
Well, I was working full-time, but I was making $7 an hour. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to pay for school at the same
time. I see. Yeah, that's right. You were going to school
full
time and stuff. Wow.
Yeah. So now, you know, we have two homes and we drive nice cars and, you know, we look back and...
That's such a cool story.
Oh, thank you.
But I see, here's an example. We were talking about dreams and stuff. I mean, everybody's dreams look different, but you made major sacrifices for what you wanted,
yeah,
what you believed. You wanted to better your life and go to college and And I think that that makes it even more sweet, right?
Oh,
is it totally. Just more sweet? Because you're not some silver spoon brat that had everything.
Absolutely.
You're like, damn it, I had no shoes with nasty ragged holes. Give me my Lexus! Give me my Lexus! Yeah. I like it. I think it's sweet. I think it's like, you know. And they say, my roommate, we're really close friends, and she says, you know, Kara, if you said, hey, I'm going to the city dump, you want to come? She goes, yeah, I'd be there. Because she said, I know we're going to have fun no matter what we do. She's like, you got to be with people in your life that doesn't matter what you do, where the money's coming from. You guys could be at the city dump or wherever, you know, 99 cent store or whatever, and getting your laugh on.
That's right.
And just loving life, because it really is a matter of perspective, you know. So do you feel like the person that you're with, you guys have that bond?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, we have a great time. He is really my preferred dinner guest. You know, we go out to eat and we sit there and we never run out of things to talk about.
Yeah. Now, how old were you when you guys moved in together?
I was 26 and he was 25.
I see. Okay. And, but I wanted to ask you something. I can't remember, but, wow. So 25 years, you were 25 years old and you've been together for 23 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. That's a long time, man. That's a long time.
That's great. Well,
congratulations. So you said that your mom would not step into your house
mm-hmm. for 10 years.
For 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
what
so
was that like?
Well, it certainly made for interesting Thanksgivings and Christmases too.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
You know, things were a little tense.
Yeah.
But
would you bring him along?
No.
No. Huh?
I didn't want to subject him to that.
Yeah. Or yourself? I mean, for crying out loud.
Yeah. There were some holidays I missed.
You know,
just you know. But at some point you decide not to put yourself in harm's way anymore, and the attitude is so toxic,
mm-hmm.
and for any child it wears on a child. It doesn't matter how old you are. I think deep down we all kind of want mom and dad's approval.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and why cause trouble? You
that's,
know.
Yeah, that's
right.
Not easy.
Yeah.
No, that's not easy.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you have siblings or?
Yes, I have two sisters.
And how did they take it?
Actually, really well.
Yeah.
Really well. Yeah.
Girls are kind of cool with it too.
Girls are cool with it.
They're just like, let's shop. You know, or I mean, not to stereotype, but they're just like, it's like you bond in different ways, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, girls are like, yeah, whatever. Cool. Let's all hang out, you know? I think women are a little different.
Yeah.
I think men are a little bit
weirder.
Women
are more accepting and stuff.
I think men
yes.
have a little bit more of a threatened feeling by
right.
it, you know?
Right. Because, straight guys are always, you know, oh, well. Yeah, he's looking at me some way. Yeah, it's like, oh, no, sorry, you're 74. I'm not looking at you.
That's funny.
So at what point in your life did you decide you're going to let some of this pressure out and write a book or two?
Well, that's a really good question. I was out of college, I started working at an agency called the Gay and Lesbian Adolescent Social Services, also known as GLASS. And they were a residential treatment center for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender youth. And my whole thing was my jet fuel for getting through college was kind of my anger at my parents and wanting to make a difference with the gay and lesbian community. So I went to work for this agency, and these kids were coming out of juvenile hall. Some of them were prostitutes. Some had kind of major felonies. Others were emerging schizophrenics. But we would take these kids in a lot of times off the street, and then we would give them a really nice house to live in, and therapy and food and good staff and everything. And it was during that time I read a book by the late author Paul Monette. And he was an amazing, amazing author that really chronicled his partner's death of AIDS and then his own struggle with AIDS. And he died in 1995. And when I read his work, I thought, oh, my God, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I want to do. I not die of AIDS, of course, but to write something that that will be remembered and that'll be a help
mm-hmm.
to the community
right.
For kids that are struggling. So I started writing Strings Attached back in 1999, and I had no idea what I was doing, and it took me about 6 years to actually get the manuscript finished.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. And then after I was finished with it, of course, I hadn't been published. I'd never published an article or a book. So, of course, no agent would touch me, no publisher would touch me. And I shopped it around for a year, and I took courses on query writing, which is where you write a letter to, you know, to an agent or a publisher, and nothing. I got a huge wall of silence. So I ran into a woman who's now a best-selling author, Kathleen McGowan, And she said, you need to self-publish this. Do what I did. Self-publish this.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me her resource over at Book Search, which was a it's kind of like CreateSpace, iUniverse, Author House. There are a number of publishing on-demand houses out there. And she said, you know, give this guy a call, and he'll and he was basically a sales rep. And, you know, they take your money, and then they you produce a book.
Right.
But the cool thing about it is that my partner is a graphic designer, and he did a great cover for it. And long story short is that the book wound up, I mean, my first month, I think I sold 4 books, but it wound up being in the top 10 in gay fiction for 40 weeks on Amazon.
Wow.
Mm. And it was word of mouth. It just took off. And my second book, Double Bound, I chose to self-publish that. I was actually offered a publishing contract for that. And I thought, no, because when you're self-published, you make a 35% royalty on that paperback. Mm. Whereas if with a traditional publisher, you're getting 10%, and then out of that, you have to pay 15% to your agent. So,
really?
So the money is so much better with self-publishing. So I self-published the second book. And then last year, I was approached by Amazon Encore.
Mm-hmm.
And Amazon Encore is the new publishing imprint for Amazon. And I was the second author that was asked to come on board.
Nice.
And So they've actually, they copy-edited the books. They did away with Jamie's covers, which made me sad, but they did some great covers for the books, and they're doing terrifically.
So you did decide to go with Amazon Encore.
Yeah.
Because the money, even the percentage that you would get, would still be larger.
The volume is so much
huge.
Greater.
Okay, that's what you got to kind of weigh. Okay, cool. Well, congratulations to you on that. Does that feel
Thank
awesome?
Thank you. Yeah, it does.
I mean, just the honor to be asked, and you mean they? I mean, it's so great when you're the one they're approaching you because then you hold power, and it's like, no, okay, we'll go.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's so cool. And so how long has it been out with Amazon Encore?
Strings Attached came out on March 9th, and Double Bound came out June 1st. And Strings Attached has been the number one gay and lesbian title on Amazon now for 5 weeks running.
Oh, my
really?
Gosh.
Really?
Yeah.
Very
really,
nice.
Really
Congratulations
cool.
to you. So, now, I mean, had you written before?
I had journaled. My adolescence was so awful. I still have these journals, and every once in a while I'll break it open and, you know, go, oh my God, yeah, I remember that. And so I still have a whole, you know, there's a shelf in my book, a space in my bookshelf that
right.
that has those terrible, you know, the evidence of the horror that was my adolescence. but that was basically most of my writing. And I used to just write for fun and little short stories and things, mm-hmm. but I never had anything published.
Wow.
That's really
and
cool.
And that took like 6 years, you say, to put it together, huh? That's a long time. I mean, you obviously have a lot of persistence because not only did you, you know, persist in writing the book, but then also when all the doors were shut,
yes.
you still continued, you know?
Let's talk about that because I think that kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier, just
yeah.
kind of how, you know, people have dreams and they have ideas. And you know, I've found that it's not a blueprint. It's not a one-size-fits-all. And I think some people try it the way they see is lined up and it doesn't work. And then they feel discouraged, like, okay, well, then it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're an example of somebody that's had to kind of go around about and really have faith and really believe. I mean, where did that come from somebody that said, hey, I didn't write, really. I journaled, but I didn't really... I mean, you didn't have the conventional tools, right?
No.
So,
no.
But yet, here you are, hey, number one on Amazon, yeah. gay and fiction, get your book, shit. Is that cool?
That's very cool.
Do you know, I just love stories like that, you know, Diablo Cody and all these people that, you know, she had a blog.
Yeah, yeah.
And now she is Oscar-winning, and Spielberg did United States of Terror. I mean, come on now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, come on. I love hearing that. It's like, you know, there's something inside them that, you know, they at the right time, the right people saw them, but they also had a something internal.
Well, I think that's what it's all about. I mean, I was told as a gay man growing up, coming of age in the 70s, that if you are gay, you're going to be miserable. And then in the 80s, we had AIDS was rampant in the 90s, of course. So it was, if you're a gay man, you're going to die of AIDS. And I had no assistance to get myself through college, but I wound up making it through college just by working my butt off.
Mm.
And then with this book too, it's been your book will never succeed.
Mm.
Well, you know what, it has.
Yeah.
You know, and,
that's
and
awesome.
That's been exciting. But it's really, you know, but it's also the books are really about struggle too, and
mm-hmm.
it's about my characters are the same. Have that same tenacity where they just don't give up. They know what they need to be happy, and they're just not going to give up.
Yeah.
So cool. For you, with people telling you these things like, okay, well, you're going to be unhappy, then you're going to have AIDS and die, and then you didn't die, you didn't get AIDS, and your book succeeded. How has it been, I mean, for your life as a gay man versus what you were told it would be? How has that been? I mean, what was true, what was not true?
It's a difference between a black and white movie and one that's in color, you know, all I can say is I continue to have a wonderful life, and knock on wood right there. Anytime I've had the opportunity to sort of mentor any person who's been, you know, gay or straight, my message is always just keep working at it. Yeah. You know, if you believe in it, just keep working.
Right.
Throw your heart into it.
Yeah.
Do whatever you need to do.
Yeah. Hmm. And don't try to become the second Oprah right away, right?
Not right away.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
she's
Kara.
Like, I'm not so sure
he's
about
that. He's trying
to
drive home some obscure point because he wants people to have money in their bank account, but whatever. Anyway.
All right. We'll take a little break. You'll stay with us, and we'll talk more about your books and everything. So don't go away. We'll be back right after this.
On your computer, on your Wi-Fi radio, on your iPhone, commercial-free original talk, only on LA Talk Radio, your favorite talk station.
Sweet smile, stolen moments that we share.
shitty talk radio proliferates the internet, two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Kara in the morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, and we're in the studio with Nick Nolan.
Nick Nolan, everybody. Nick Nolan. Two books. Number one on eBay for gay and lesbian fiction.
Amazon.
Just playing. Amazon. Joking. eBay now is our governor, right?
eBay. How did you get eBay?
I don't know. eBay. No. eBay lady. She's the governor, right?
Not yet.
Not yet. But
and hopefully never.
Hopefully. But she's elected, right?
Huh? No, she hasn't been elected.
No,
yet.
The election's coming up.
Yeah. Oh God, you guys, exposing my ignorance.
She's too busy eating Texas food. That's what it is.
Oh man, I'm drunk off of pork chops.
Well, the news is going right
anyway,
by you.
Anyway, let's get back to Nick Nolan, number one on Amazon.
So let's talk about the books a little bit. So the first one was Strings Attached,
yes.
Right? And so what's this one about?
Strings Attached is a deconstruction of the story of Pinocchio. Pinocchio was a puppet whose only wish was to be a real boy, and in my book, Jeremy Tyler is a codependent teenager, which sort of metaphor for puppet, mm-hmm. whose only wish is to be a real man, which means straight.
Mm.
So I took all the characters from the original Pinocchio story, which was written by Carlo Collodi, and his Aunt Catherine's very demanding, and she plays Geppetto. And his Uncle Bill is, well, I won't go into Uncle Bill because that'll ruin the story. But one of the other really powerful characters is Arthur. Now, Arthur plays the Blue Fairy. And his last name actually is Blaufey, which in German means Blue Fairy.
Fairy.
and so he has sort of this supernatural ability to anticipate Jeremy's needs, and he's his protector and his mentor,
mm-hmm.
and he has this secret identity that's revealed towards the end of the book. It's a murder mystery. It's a page turner, and that's one of the greatest compliments that I get. I get emails from readers that say, "I couldn't put the book down.
Yeah.
I read
that's
it."
That's the best compliment.
It is
huh?
absolutely the best compliment. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I definitely want to read it now. You know, I mean, it sounds pretty. So how did the idea come about? I mean, how did you decide with the Pinocchio deal and all that?
Well, it was. I love a fish out of water story, and it Jeremy starts out in this horrible apartment living in Fresno with his alcoholic mother, and he comes home from school one day and she's passed out again. So he calls 911 and they haul her off to rehab. So mm-hmm. he then is transported to the only relative that can care for him, which is his wealthy aunt and uncle that live in a fictitious mm-hmm. Community called Balena Beach. Mm-hmm. Balena is Spanish for whale. And Balena Beach is actually Malibu, and it's a thinly disguised Malibu, but it's fabulous. And, mm-hmm. you know, he goes from living in this slummy apartment to living in this clifftop estate overlooking the ocean. And,
wow.
You know, and he has to learn the names of the rooms, like the conservatory and the foyer, and, you know... So it really is a fish out of water. I mean, he really does. Yeah, he's thrown into this very exclusive high school, and all the kids are cool and beautiful, and they drive nice cars, and so he has to adjust to all of that. But mm-hmm. at the same time, there's always this underlying mystery, because what happened to his father? Was it really a car accident, or was there something more sinister at play?
Right.
So he's dealing with that. He's dealing with his alcoholic mother that shows up from rehab unannounced.
Mm-hmm.
He's dealing with his attraction to another young man on the swim team. He's dealing with his trying to make his relationship work with this gorgeous girl named Reed, who's just she's a terrific
what
character.
A rich gorgeous girl name that's young. Reed. I could just see Reed. Oh my gosh, she's very well addressed, a good name. That's a good name, Reed. My name is Reed. I just could see it. I could see a Reed.
Yeah, so Reed now, Banks, by the way, that's your last
so
name.
So now, did you have to take courses in creative writing and that sort of thing?
I didn't, Sam.
Really?
You know, I sometimes I wish I did. And I was a psychology major, and of course, when I started writing this, I thought, oh my goodness, if only I'd taken some English Lit or American Lit or creative writing. But no. You know what? Actually, I take it back. I did take one course over at the Gay and Lesbian Center by a wonderful author by the name of Iofemi Folayan. And Iofemi is a lesbian feminist African-American author in a wheelchair. She's just amazing. And this was a creative writing. It wasn't really on how to structure a novel or do anything like that, but it was just how to open the door, that creative door in your mind, and just to write. So I did take that. I forgot. That was years and years ago. But but nothing besides that.
Right. So now this book was written when?
I started in 99 and I finished in 2005.
I see. Okay. And then how much longer after that did you get into Double Bound?
Double Bound, I started that immediately after finishing Strings Attached, and that was self-published back in 2008. Both books won Book of the Year awards from Forward Magazine, which is basically a trade journal that librarians use.
Mm-hmm.
So that came out in 2008, and then Amazon Encore approached me, and I signed with them back in 2009.
Wow,
so cool.
Yeah, that's really amazing. You know.
What about Double Bound? What is that about?
Well, Double Bound is actually Arthur's story.
Oh, okay.
So it picks up kind of where Strings Attached left off.
So like a sequel, is this?
Yes, it is
okay.
A sequel.
Okay, good.
But it really goes into what Arthur went through as a gay Marine who lost his partner in a tragedy. And it came from a very, let's say, an unwelcoming family when it came to being gay. Mm-hmm. Gee, I wonder where I got that idea. And anyway, and so they go on this crazy trip to Brazil because Aunt Catherine has this resort that she's put a lot of money into. And so it's actually a takeoff on Jack and the Beanstalk. Mm-hmm. And if you know anything about Jack and the Beanstalk, it's where an elderly woman runs out of money. She sends a young man off. There's a castle involved. There are
the beans goes to the sky.
The beans are it's a coffee bean plantation. But the main thing is that there is a chicken or a goose that lays golden eggs that is kidnapped. And mm-hmm. in this case, it's Jeremy Tyler who is gay parlance for a young man used to be chicken. So who lays the golden eggs. He's from the Tyler family. They're very wealthy. So there's a kidnapping involved. There's a lot of intrigue, but also in both books I put a lot of spirituality in it, non-traditional spirituality. Double Bound, I took Yoruban mythology, which is actually the religion from Africa that came over with the slaves. And so there's Yoruban mythology mixed in with Greek mythology. And in Strings Attached, there's also some Greek mythology built into it. So there are different layers mm-hmm. In
it's
the
really
stories.
Interesting. The whole like using these children's stories and going, okay, that's going to be my outline.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know. In
yeah,
a way.
And then I pepper it with gay sex.
Well, so. There you go. Some hot gay Jack the Beanstalk sex. Laying some golden eggs, whatever that is. Man, that's interesting. So yeah. What's the response that you've gotten for Double Bound?
The Double Bound, it's funny. People are very strong in their opinions. They either love Strings Attached and they weren't so hot on Double Bound, or they love Double Bound and weren't so hot on Strings Attached. So mm-hmm. they're very, very different stories. Double Bound is a darker story. It's intense. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of conflict. There's a lot of angst on Arthur's part because of feelings that he starts developing for Jeremy. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the first book, Jeremy was strictly this kid that he was mentoring. Right. And then, but by the end of the book, by the end of Strings Attached, we know that Jeremy has become a real man, and thus Arthur has to view him as a real man also.
Right.
So there's a little change in his perspective.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, when you write, do you know how the book's going to end, or do you pretty much, does it develop as you go along?
It really develops as I go along.
Really?
And I'm a big believer in trusting the muses. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have note cards pinned up here's chapter one, here's chapter two, you know, and I don't do that. I just start writing.
Yeah. And, wow, that's amazing.
But I do a lot of editing and revising, and sometimes I'll be walking the dogs and I'll have a brainstorm, so I'll go back and tappity-tappity, and I'll hammer that in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's really cool. I like seeing, you know, creative processes are so different for everybody, and I think that that's very liberating for people to hear that, because they don't know where to start. They think they have to do it this way, and for some people it's not. You just get it out.
Yeah, you just keep working, but you keep working, and you have to love it.
Right.
If you love writing, or you know, if you love rollerblading, you love whatever it is. You love being on the radio.
Yeah.
You just keep working at it.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think you can do this if you don't really love writing, you know, and reading and stories and things like that. You
right.
know? So, because, I love reading. I don't know that I could write a novel, you know. I mean, it seems like such an insurmountable project, you know. And yet you did two of them, you know. Now, is there anything new in the works?
Book three is almost finished.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's a deconstruction of Snow White, actually. So, yeah, there's a theme there.
I'm sure Disney's going to love you for that, huh?
But I always go, that's the thing, I always go beyond, way before Disney, and I look at the original tales, like with Carlo Collodi writing Pinocchio, and you know, and Snow White's a crazy story. If you read some of the other versions of it that existed before the Disney movie, woo, it's very violent.
Really?
The original ones, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. And we know it as a happy little fairy tale.
Yeah.
Well, that's so awesome. I think it's exciting. Keep us posted on the third book. Can you drop the name or no?
No.
No, okay. I want a spoiler alert. But.
And you can get the books at Amazon, obviously.
Yes.
And, I mean, have you tried to get them into the bookstores as well?
You know, there used to be a great bookstore in L.A., in West Hollywood, called A Different Light. And A Different Light was sort of the hub of West Hollywood at one point. And it just went out of business last year. Mm-hmm. And it's very sad. And, you know, and I feel, you know, I love Amazon because anybody, anywhere, I mean, if you're the biggest closet case in the world, you can still buy my books on Amazon and no one knows.
Yeah. I love Amazon. I mean, you can get books that you can't get anywhere, you know?
Right.
So it's really cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Nick Nolan, of course, the books are Strings Attached and Double Bound. And again, congratulations to you.
Thank you, Sam.
So they're pretty new. They were just released.
Yes, this year.
Wonderful.
I do need to send a shout out before we leave, if you guys don't mind, as well. I have a wonderful aunt. Her name is Wendy Wendelin, and I call her Wendell Wynn. And she's listening. She listens all the time. Today is her birthday.
Happy birthday.
She is actually a closeted writer herself. She writes a lot, and she just hasn't taken the plunge yet. She's written tons and tons of great stuff. So hopefully she's inspired. So happy birthday, Aunt Wendy. I call her Wine Box Wendy because she loves to drink wine from the wine box.
She sounds like a gal I'd like to
know. Oh, my gosh. She's hysterical. She's very talented. And anyway, happy birthday. Best wishes, Wendell Wynn. And happy birthday. So,
all right. Nick, thank you so much. All the best to you.
Thank you, Sam.
Kara, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back here tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondents to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.